Zayin Shvat, Wednesday, the 23rd of January, Rabbi Vromi Lichtig, Amalek versus Yisroel.
So, even though the topic will be about Yisroel versus Amalek, but I want to start talking a bit about Tu B'Shvat 2 days ago. Now, we are told that Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah, the first day of the year, for trees. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that Shavuos is a Din Torah, is a day we are judged on the trees. And how do we celebrate Tu B'Shvat? We celebrate Tu B'Shvat by eating fruits. And how do we celebrate Shavuos? We celebrate Shavuos...
Cheesecake.
Also, we celebrate Shavuos by decorating our houses and our shuls with branches from trees. And it's quite ironic that the time of the year when we just about have a glimpse of the fruit, where we can't even see the fruit, we are celebrating it by eating fruit. And the time when we are actually selling the fruit in the market, when we are selling it in the shops, that is the time in the year when we are celebrating it by putting just the bare branches on the walls. And it seems to be that it should really be the opposite. That's the first question. The second question is that, of course, the reason why I'm here today, well, not in this shul, but the reason why I'm in England is for my sister-in-law's getting married today. We should share many simchas together. And we can have a similar question by chasnas, by weddings. And the question is as follows. That why are we celebrating a marriage? The question really is that when the chasan and kala, they don't know each other very well. They're just about in the very Haredi circle. They just about know each other. In some other circles, they know each other a bit better. They don't actually know each other on a very close level. And really, they should be celebrating when they've celebrated many simchas together, they've gone through many things together, they've up to their 50th anniversary, whatever it is. That is the time, really, when they should be celebrating their anniversary. They should be celebrating. And why is it that when at the time when they're actually getting married is the time when we make all the fanfare? Now, those are the first two questions. We'll digress a bit, and we'll come back to these two questions later. Now, this week's parasha is Parashas Yisroel. And our parasha starts off telling us about Yisroel coming to be Megayah, to come and convert and join the Jewish nation. And what does Rashi say? Rashi asks the famous question, Ma Shmua Shoma Obo? What did Yisroel hear about that brought him to come and join the Jewish nation? Rashi in three different places discusses different events which spearheaded Yisroel to come and join the Jewish nation. And Rashi tells us, the first Rashi tells us, Ma Shmua Shoma Obo, Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, Mechemes Amalek. Rashi, in the end of the first puzzle, says, you read this Haman, which means the falling down of the man which we received every single day from Hashem, Obeer, the water which flowed from the well of Miriam, and Amalek, the war of Amalek. And again, in a few psukim later, when Moshe tells over to Yisroel, about all which happened, Eis Kala Tala'a, the Pasuk says, all the things which happened, the Pasuk says that Rashi tells us again, he tells over about Milchamas Amalek. Which means that Rashi seems to point to us that among the things which spearheaded Yisroel to come, it was definitely Milchamas Amalek, the war of Amalek, which is what pushed Yisroel to come and convert, to come and join the Jewish nation. Now, it's quite interesting that the Pasuk last week tells us during the Shira, the Pasuk says, Shamu Amim Yergozim, which means to say that the whole nation, the whole Goshen world, the whole non-Jewish world, they heard and they were agitated. They were disturbed about what was going on. Which means to say that the whole world, the entire world which there was at that point in history, knew about what was going on in Mitzrayim. And yet, of the whole world which came to join the Jewish nation, one person joined, and that was Yisroel. And even Paro himself, he himself knew that it was not worth starting up Well, let's go a stage further back, which means to say that Amalek, on the other hand, they saw what happened to Klal Yisrael, and yet they joined last week. They came and they fought with the Jewish nation. They fought with Klal Yisrael. And again, this week's parsha, again, later on we find that again Amalek come and fight Klal Yisrael. Which means to say, let's just put that into perspective. We have the whole world heard about what happened to the Jewish nation, and no one came to join Klal Yisrael. Yisroi heard, and he joined. And Amalek heard, and they came to fight. And even Paro himself, he knew himself that it wasn't worth starting up with the Jews, because he himself, he said that, the Medrash tells us in Parashat Shemos, the Medrash tells us that when he knew what happened to Klal Yisrael, to many years before, he heard about the Mabul, he heard about all the different events that had happened till now, and he said, how am I going to kill the Jews? And eventually he came up with a plan that he was going to enslave them, and he said, let's not kill them with water, because we know that Hashem is not going to bring a Mabul. All different things which Paro went through. Now, who were the three people? There were three people which Paro called to advise him on how to enslave Klal Yisrael. The three people, Bilam, Yisroi, and Eov. And the Medrash in Parashat Shemos tells us that these three people, each of them had a different approach of how to approach Paro. The first one, which was Bilam, he said, enslave the Jews. Put the Jews in captivity, which was the plan which was eventually carried out by Paro. Eov, he sat there and he kept quiet. And as a result, he actually got punished. He was, he had much suffering over his life. Eventually, according to those that say that Eov was Eov. And Yisroi, he ran away, he fled. Eventually, Yisroi ended up in Midian. And the Medrash tells us that he tried out every avodah zarah, every single type of idolatry that there was. And eventually he was shunned by the Midianim. All the Midianites over there, they shunned him and they kept him out of their lives. And all those years he was wondering what actually took place in Mitzrayim, remembering that Mitzrayim was locked to all, no one was allowed in, and very few people were allowed out. The magic kept everyone in. And when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, that was the first time that it spread around the world what actually took place in Mitzrayim. And all of a sudden, there was the Yam Suf, and everyone in the entire world's waters split. And everyone was wondering, what's going on over here? And as the word spread, what had happened, as Rashi tells us, the Kriyas Yam Suf, all the Makkas, everything was spread around the world, what actually took place. There's a famous story which I heard a few years ago, which is actually written in the book called Impact from Rabbi Kaplan. I'm sure he's been here before. And he brings the story that he was once travelling in a taxi in Israel. Now, taxis in Israel are famous for the taxi driver saying over their stories. And there was this taxi driver, he was telling over to Rabbi Kaplan the story which took place to him. And he says the following. He says that after he left the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, he decides, like many other Israelis, to go and explore the world. And he wound up in South America, in the Amazon forest, and he was there with his friends. And one day, they were walking along through the forest, and there in front of them was a boa constrictor, a poisonous snake, and the way he kills his prey is by winding the body of the snake around the person, strangling them, and then eventually eating them. Now, the boa constrictor went ahead to his friend and wound his body around this friend of his. And the friend was, there wasn't much time left, and the friends in every single person's death situation, what did they say? Shema Yisrael. And he screamed out, Shema Yisrael! And miraculously, the boa constrictor, they managed to get away this boa constrictor, the snake, and it left them. And as a result, this friend went ahead and became religious. So Rabbi Kaplan turns to the taxi driver and he says to him, and what about you? He goes, nah, that was my friend. So what was Rabbi Kaplan saying? Rabbi Kaplan said the following. He says, that is the message really which we have in life. Hashem sends us messages to us every single day. And every single day we have messages that Hashem is in our lives and things go on in our lives. But if we don't actually pinpoint them, find out what actually took place, then we won't see them. And this was Yisro. Yisro, he saw the messengers, he saw the redemption from Mitzrayim, he saw the redemption from Egypt, and he heard about the splitting of the sea. He actually saw it. And all he did was he just opened up his eyes. And when he opened up his eyes, he saw Hashem's handiwork there. And he used the moment and he took the action and he joined the Jewish nation. He was Megaya to convert and join the Jewish nation. On the other hand, Amalek, what did they do? They saw all this and they didn't take it to heart. They just ignored it. And they let it sink inside them, and it just, 2-3 days, it was gone. And the next thing they knew, someone wound them up, someone got them excited, and the next thing they knew was, attack, let's get rid of the Jews. They're going to eventually come and start with us. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Pei Beis, tells us that the reason why we have Kriyas HaTorah, why we read the Torah every Monday and Thursday, is because of a story which took place at the end of last week's parasha. The parasha says, Vayechu Shloishes Yomim V'lo Imotu Mayim. The Klal Yisrael went 3 days and they couldn't find water. What does it mean that they couldn't find water? So the Gemara tells us that they didn't learn Torah, meaning to say that they didn't. Hashem wasn't constantly in their lives, and as a result, Hashem took away the water, and therefore they had to pray to Hashem, they had to daven to Hashem to have the water back. Now, what was the next episode which took place? The next episode which took place was Vayelochim Amalek im Yisrael. Amalek came to fight with Klal Yisrael. And the Baal HaTorim explains over here that Am Yisrael b'Rafidim, Klal Yisrael in this place called Rafidim, which was the place where there was no water, the Baal HaTorim says, Bigmatria Rofu Yidehem Min HaMitzvahs, which means to say they loosened themselves, they relaxed in the mitzvahs which they were keeping, in the mitzvahs which they were doing towards Hashem. And the next episode which takes place straight after that was Amalek coming to fight with Klal Yisrael. They didn't have Hashem in their lives, and therefore because they didn't have Hashem in their lives, who has to come and teach them where Hashem is? It was Amalek. So the same Amalek who doesn't take the lesson, who didn't see what happened in the world, it was that Amalek who came and fought Klal Yisrael to teach Klal Yisrael the lesson, when they don't look out for Hashem in their lives, look what will happen. And the Eben Ezra writes that the reason why last week's parasha was finished off with Amalek, and this week's parasha started off with Yisro, was to teach us the correlation, the connection between the two parashas. Someone who doesn't look at Hashem, someone who doesn't connect with Hashem in their lives, will eventually reject Hashem. Whereas Yisro, he looks at Hashem in his life, he looks for all the different things which happened in his life, the different episodes, and he came and he joined the Jewish nation, he joined Klal Yisrael. And that's perhaps the reason why this is the parasha when we are Mekabel Torah. This week's Sedra is when we have the Aseret HaDibros. This is the parasha where Klal Yisrael had the safe, when Mekabel Torah. And perhaps the reason is because in this week's parasha, where Yisro was looking for the messages in his life, that is the message of the Torah. Now, I remember my first shmooze when I arrived in Shiva Katana a few years ago. Tzvi Rav Sivak starts off his first Shabbos shmooze. He says, everyone likes missing Tachanun. And this is one of my friends once told me recently, he says to me, it's one of those things that the Goyim don't have. They don't have this enjoyment of missing Tachanun. And Tu B'Shvat is one of those days when we don't say Tachanun. And what is there in Tu B'Shvat when we don't say Tachanun? Now, if we look at the three things which we could possibly don't say or do say on special days, we don't say Tachanun, we don't say Lamnatzeach, but many days we do say Halal. Now, if we look at Tu B'Shvat, we don't say Tachanun, we do say Lamnatzeach, and we also don't say Halal. Now, it means to say that there's something specific in about Tachanun, specific in Tachanun, connected to Tu B'Shvat. So what is there in Tu B'Shvat which is connected to Tachanun? So what is the Inyan of Tachanun? The Inyan of Tachanun is that we are asking forgiveness from Hashem for all the bad things, for all the things which we have done wrong in the past day, the previous days, Sfadim actually say Oshamnu every single day. Ashkenazim don't, but Vayom David El God was actually a story which David HaMelech was asking for forgiveness for the things which he had done wrong in his life. And we are asking Hashem for Hashkocha Pratis, to have Hashem in our lives on the days when we are struggling, in the days when we feel that we have done wrong, and we are saying, Hashem, please, even though we don't deserve to have the goodness from you, but still please, have us in your lives. That you should be in our lives, sorry. Last year, I heard that this is the message of Tu B'Shvat as well. I heard the shir from, I saw, or actually read the shir, that if you would look outside at this present moment, at the trees, well actually when I arrived to England last night, then it was actually snowing, but the trees outside, most trees are bare, there's nothing on the trees. And this is the time of the year where Tu B'Shvat actually falls in. The time of the year where Tu B'Shvat falls in is the time of the year when the outside is bare, where it's cold, and we are rejoicing on fruits which we can't see. And 3 days ago I heard this incredible story about Rav Shmuel Vosner, which took place in 1939. 1939 was the year where the Nazis were Yimach Shemam. Rav Shmuel Vosner saw that the dangers of the Nazis, and he decided that it was time to escape Austria. He came along with his wife, and they found a boat which was leaving from Austria, eventually going to Eretz Yisrael. And he took the opportunity and he took this illegal boat to arrive in Eretz Yisrael. Now they were 2 miles away from Eretz Yisrael, and all of a sudden the boat stops. They were 2 miles away from Eretz, 2 kilometers away from Eretz Yisrael, and the boat stops. And the captain makes an announcement. He says, "We are 2 kilometers away from Eretz Yisrael, and we have run out of fuel. And the British are chasing our boat. They're closing in on us. If they arrive here, then you'll almost definitely be sent back to Austria. So the only option is, those who are capable, is to swim to the shore." Of the entire boat, 18 people, this is the way that I heard from official Shachta, 18 people decided to brave it and swim to the shore. Two of them were Shmuel Vosner and his wife. Now the 16 others, they swam together, and they decided that the safest way to go was by taking off all their clothes. And Rav Shmuel Vosner said that it worked for, even though it's quite interesting, he took this into account, that since it wasn't sneers, the fact that they didn't have any clothes on, he and his wife swam to shore, just the two of them together. That means even though a group together could be safer, they went together, just the two of them. And they were swimming to shore. And when they were swimming to shore, many times they felt that the end has come. And eventually, after a long time, they arrived to the shores of Netanya. And Rav Fischer Schachter took out from this story. He said there's a time in our lives when it doesn't make sense that we have a future in our lives. It doesn't make sense that anything is going to come out. Everything seems to be bleak. And we have the choice to go on or to stop. And he says that's the same with the trees outside. The trees outside are bare. It seems to be that there's nothing happened. If we would look outside, arriving planet Earth today, and we would look at the trees, and we would say, is there going to be fruit? We would probably say, why should there be fruit? There's nothing going on outside. But the only way is to face it. Because we have to face it and say, the same way that last year, the fruit came to a full cycle, and they actually came back. And they came, and we had beautiful fruit. Up until now, so too, even though things are looking bare outside, everything will come back again. Hashem created us in the same way. When we were first born, we were incapable of doing anything. We have to be fed, we have to be dressed. Everything is done by our parents. Why did Hashem create us in this way? And the reason is because Hashem wants to show us that life is ahead of us, not what has been already. Everything's ahead of us. Look at the potential which we all have. On the opposite side, we have animals. Animals, they're born, and minutes later or hours later, they're already walking, eating. They're taught to eat by themselves very soon after birth, because they're not created for the potential which they have. They're created for other purposes. We as human beings, we are created for the future in our lives. And therefore, even if things aren't looking good, we should always look what we have ahead of us. When we celebrate a wedding in Chasna, it's with the same pattern. We have a simcha when someone gets married. It's not what they have now. We're celebrating what's going to be in the future. The potential that's going to be. And it's quite interesting that many people actually sing the song of Ilon Ilon, which is, talks about, which may be referring to Tu B'Shvat at Chasanas, because there's a direct connection between Tu B'Shvat and weddings, Chasanas. It's actually interesting that 2 days ago I'm in Gibraltar Kolon, and Gibraltarians seem to have a minag, a custom for every single event in the year, they seem to have their own songs. And on Tu B'Shvat, they sang a song, which for the Kaddish, for Baruch Hu, for Michamoicha, for Al Seidon, everything that they could possibly sing, they sing. And so I decided that, knowing that I'm going to be speaking and start there, I decided that I'm going to ask someone there, what was this tune? Which part of the year does this tune fit into? And they told me that they sing this in two other events. One is on Shavuos, and one is when a baby girl is born. So, Tu B'Shvat, Shavuos, and when a baby girl is born, which they seem to say that it's all about flowery events. That's what they said to me. But it's interesting that maybe that's the connection, that Shavuos and Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is when we're singing it, we're singing for the potential which there is here. And that's why we have the minhag to eat fruits on Tu B'Shvat. We show that despite this apple, this hazelnut, whichever fruit which we're eating, seems to be non-existent now, but last year, there was a full fruit, a complete, beautiful, ripe fruit. And it's here today for us to eat. And therefore, how can I myself not believe in my potential? If this fruit was dead last year, and it's dead, and on the trees it seems to be dead now, and yet Hashem created that it's going to be a beautiful fruit, of course we have to believe in ourselves. Now, when a couple gets married, the first week of Sheva Brochus, the wedding themselves, they spend the first week being told of everything they have going for them, all the potential which they have. And that is the first week, which after they take this week of Sheva Brochus, they're supposed to say, look what everyone's spoken about us, and take this to the life they have ahead of them. And similarly, Klal Yisrael had this when they went through, when they left the Midbar. When they left the Midbar, then what happened was, we are told they had these 7 days, Hashem brought them up and up and up a level, and eventually they hit Kriyas Yamsuf. And the Medrash tells us that the level that they had at Kriyas Yamsuf, they had a nevuah that even the shifcha, the maidservant at the sea, had a nevuah like Yecheskel ben Buzi, which was nearly the highest level of nevuah which a person can have. Hashem was showing them how high they could actually reach. And Amalek came and fought with them. And the message Amalek came and sent with them was that if you don't look for the message, look how far you can fall. That means to say, straight after 3 days, they didn't connect Hashem with their lives. 3 days later, Amalek came and fought with them. I remember when I was probably 14 years old, there's in the gates of the something called Luchavonim, a youth club, which is they take the boys out on different outings, trips. And my first time, they took us on an overnight trip, they took us to a place called Sea Houses, which is in the Pennines. And on the second day there, we were there walking through the Pennines, and it was approximately 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the Madrich, the counsellor there, said to us, "We're lost." And I remember one of my friends there, one of my classmates was there, he was crying, "Shema Yisrael, that's the end." Well, of course, only 14 years old. You think you're never going to find anything, and there were friends there saying Shema, that was it. And our Madrich was there, he says to us, "I think we haven't said Tefillah Saderach today." And we said Tefillah Saderach, and really, minutes later, seconds later, it was very, very shortly after, we found the way. At that time, they told us, they said, sometimes Hashem sends us little messages in our lives. That was just a little message. I don't think we were in any sort of sense of danger, but it's a small message in our lives. Hashem says, if you look for me, Hashem will find you. Can find me. Just say tefillah, which is the tefillah for our safe being. You look for me, and you can find me. We're halfway through Shavuot. Now we're told there's two times in the year where we retrace our footsteps. We have Pesach, where we have a quick going through the sea, following the year and starting life again. And then we have Shavuot, which is where we're halfway through Shavuot at the moment. We're up to Parashat Yisro. And during these weeks of Shavuot, we have an 8-week, this year because of leap year, we have an 8-week procedure where we go through the year, where we, as a Jewish nation, we read the parashas going out of Klal Yisrael, and during these years we're supposed to work on ourselves and bring ourselves back to where Klal Yisrael were at Matan Torah. And this week happens to be Parashat Yisro. And during these weeks, it happens to be that the Shavuot weeks are during the winter. Where during the winter, where it's very dark and bleak outside, I remember Rav Eber told us a few years ago, Rav Eber is a big mashkiach in Eretz Yisrael, and he told us a few years ago that during the winter months where everything's dark outside is the time in the month, maybe because of the lack of light, is where people find it the most difficult period of the year to get through. And he said that that is a time where Shavuot takes place, because Shavuot is a time where we have to look at, constantly have a chizuk in our lives, and if we use these months of Shavuot, these weeks of Shavuot, sorry, and we look at Parashas Yisro, and this is the week where last week Amalek came and fought us. Yisro took the message, and eventually that led on to Matan Torah, to see that someone who looks for the potential in their lives and looks for Ribbono Shel Olam in their lives, Hashem is there always for us. Have a good day. Thank you.